calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name? Buried in cheers and applause? Well, I think not. Hey, what's that?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Okay, that's enough. Thought I'd change it up a bit there, my friends. It's the first birthday of That Larry Show. Thank you. Thank you. And it's nearly Christmas, too. Leave it to me to gift my show with the lament of people born near Christmas who feel gypped by the confluence of the two. So this episode will be sort of a hybrid Christmas-slash-birthday show. On the other hand, maybe I'm unconsciously copying Jesus. I do occasionally get an urge to sleep in a manger. And if three wise guys want to visit and bring me gifts, that's okay too. Gold, bitcoins, and cannolis, please. You can keep the frankincense and myrrh. So I guess we'll first deal with the show's, is it a birthday or an anniversary? I'm going to call it a birthday because I detest the word anniversary. Anniversary is stodgy and stilted and formal and boring. Nobody ever has wild parties around an anniversary, do they? They go out to a restaurant and have dinner and come home. Whereas birthday celebrations have been known to lead to hospitalization or jail time, much more festive. Now, here's my birthday gift to all of you. Have a listen. You better not blame. Better not whine, don't be pointing your finger. I'm telling you why, 'cause Scandal Claus is coming to town. Whether Weinstein or Spacey or Louis C.K., Franken or Ratner or Georgia Takei, ooh, Scandal Claus is coming to town. Ooh, he sees you when you're groping, and he knows what's on your mind. What you thought you got away with, he will shove up your behind. You grabbed a little ass, made a naughty joke. Maybe you gave somebody a poke. And now Scandal Claus is coming to town. Hey now, Charlie Rose, don't be treating those ladies like hoes. Garrison Keillor, if you've been copping some feelers, you'll be wishing your woes be gone. Hey, Matty Lauer, why so dour? Welcome to the world of girl power. Geraldo's so flirty, but he's also kinda dirty. It's the name and shame, and get yourself some treatment game. He sees you when you're playing, maybe playing with yourself. And if you made somebody watch, he gonna put you on that shelf. Don't be dropping no roofies in nobody's drink, or sneaking up behind them at the kitchen sink, 'cause Scandal Claus is coming to town. You better be good and keep your fly zip, 'cause if and you don't, you'll be sorry as shit, 'cause Scandal Claus is coming. Scandal Claus is coming. Scandal Claus is coming. He's coming, he's coming, he's coming. Oh, Scandal Claus is coming to town. Look out. That's me, lyrics and vocals. I just finished that song, and for you and this birthday Christmas show, I hope you dig it. There's also a video on YouTube. Just Google Scandal Claus and you'll find it, or slide over to my homepage at thatlarryshow.com, where you'll see a link to it. And we're going to circle back to that song in a little bit. It's been a hell of a year. 56 regular shows, a couple of emergency episodes, a mini-sode or two, and about a dozen bonus episodes, not including the famed Vengeance trilogy. I should probably answer some questions I've been asked repeatedly, but just never got around to, like, what's it like to do a solo podcast? The answer is, for me, it's a lot of fun and a lot of work. I did a little review, and in the course of this year, I've recorded some 35 hours of original programming. That nets out to around 3.5 years of your favorite TV sitcom, except TV shows have rooms full of writers and dozens, if not hundreds, of people producing them. Or, all in, there have been about 300,000 words of That Larry Show, which, if laid end-to-end, would stretch to the moon and back how many times? I don't know. I suppose it would depend on the font size. Don't you love those attempts to make numbers have imagery? The only image I could conjure is that if my year of shows was a book, it would be a book of over 1,000 pages. Now, just writing a book of that size is a shitload of work, but then think about recording it and editing it and laying in hundreds of sound effects and making sure they're timed exactly right. And then there's those thumbnails. How do you summarize with a single image 25 or 30 minutes of content that sometimes jumps all over the place? And now the show has listeners in over 90 nations around the world. And that is some kind of kick for me. It really is. And some of those listeners are Patreonies, the inner circle of the inner sanctum, those who keep the lights on here at the Take No Shit Dojo, situated at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. A special thank you to those wonderful people. Some have asked me why I do a solo podcast. Good question. Bunch of reasons. One is, I've always been kind of a DIY guy, and I've never been real good at collaborations. I've tried a number of them over the years in music and books, and what usually happens is I've found myself doing 80% of the work for 50% of the revenue. So this is my chance to solo every week, and I figure though I put extra sweat into doing it alone, I have less agita than I might with one or more partners. Some have asked why I decided to do a podcast at all, and that is where the goss bomb I alluded to a couple of weeks back on Dick Masterson's show comes in. Everybody thinks they know everything about the provenance of these podcasts, how one partnership begat another enterprise or feud, and the truth is not what it seems. Now, I had intended to post my little goss bomb episode on the precise anniversary, birthday of my show, which is December 13, but it's going to be delayed a day or three, so please stay tuned. It will be a bonus episode for Patreonies only. I also do it solamente because I'm a big proponent of self-reliance and making it on your own, but there are limits to anyone's time and resources and skills, and I do need some help from you, my friends. No, it's not money or a kidney or an alibi, but please stay with me for a little bit. I will make my humble request a little later in the show. Let's flip over to the Christmas side of things, since it is growing very near. Last week we did the pre-holiday lock and load, where I tried to help some listeners navigate the treacherous holiday waters into which we now sail. And oh, this is not the Christmas episode. It's a Christmas/birthday show. The Christmas episode will air a week from now with a very special surprise. So what about Christmas? No other holiday is more dichotomous, We hope it will be fabulous, but there's always a strong chance it may be awful. You just never know. When expectations are ratcheted into the stratosphere, they are not easily met, are they? As toddlers, it's all good. thanks to our limited understanding. There's a nice fat man in a red suit. There are pretty twinkly lights everywhere and gift wrap boxes and TV commercials with nice-looking people giving each other shiny cars and shiny jewelry and clothing, and everyone smiles and laughs and nobody looks sad or angry or hungry or anxious or poor. When you're five, Christmas is a guaranteed blast. And it's mostly fueled by anticipation. The lead-up to the big day. Santa's gonna find out who's naughty or nice. The nice get rewarded with stuff. Stuff that we've been convinced by Madison Avenue that we need desperately. Maybe it's a new phone or those must-have sneakers. Over the weekend, I watched a Christmas parade in the San Fernando Valley. I'd heard about it for years, but finally, curiosity and some surplus time allowed me to have a look. And it was, well, like a little stroll into Mayberry. People on horseback with their nags dressed like reindeer, and a stream of vintage Chevrolets, and a wealthy woman who calls herself Batgirl in her matte black Lambo, and lowriders and cops in Santa hats and wannabe cops on bicycles. I'll never understand that stuff. Wear an outfit that's some kind of quasi-police volunteer thing so you get to be a target, but you don't get a gun to shoot back with. Anyway, I took a few pictures, and maybe I'll post them at thatlarryshow.com. And I'll take a brief detour here about Christmas and Los Angeles. People, especially people from other places, which is 99% of everyone in L.A., they love to bitch about how stupid and inauthentic Christmas in Los Angeles is. They say, where is the snow? Where is the sleigh riding? Where is the chill in the air and the winter wonderland aesthetic that seems intrinsic to Christmas? The sidewalk Santas do look like idiots in their red fur suits drenched in sweat and sunshine on 83-degree days in December. But really, if you could remove, vaporize all the hideous structural shit, the strip malls and poltergeist tract houses and neon and plastic fantastic and asphalt freeways that cover the desert floor on which all of Los Angeles sits, we might realize L.A. is a lot closer to the topography and climate of Bethlehem. Those were not snowy pine trees flanking that stable. They were palm trees. But the Northern European Santa Claus version of Christmas is the one that sells Hondas and 4K TVs, so that's what we get. But back to the Christmas parade in the hot and dusty and porn-filled San Fernando Valley. After the parade, I stopped at a chicken joint that was formerly a big-ass Skechers shoe store. And as I sat there eating my Chinese chicken wrap, which was damn good, by the way, I looked around at my fellow diners and wondered, what do they want for Christmas? Maybe just a few years ago, they wanted a nice new pair of Skechers, and they would have been buying them in this very building. But now, since Skechers are no longer considered cool, they'd sooner go barefoot. And I thought of all the trendy, must-have footwear over the years, the K-Swiss and L.A. Gear and Vans, and I'm doubtless leaving out dozens of others, but what makes something so hot and desired, and then suddenly it's regarded as shit? But really, isn't everything like that? All the crap that we blow our money on, or give to our significant others, or kids, or whomever it is, in such a short time, it's basically shelf or closet junk, and eventually, landfill. There was a fantastic episode of The Twilight Zone about some guys who steal many, many millions in gold bullion, and then they hole up in a deep mountain cave where they go into suspended animation for like 50 years until the crime is forgotten. And they wake up and head out onto the road and try to hitch a ride. And all these weird Jetson-style cars are whizzing by. And no one will stop and pick them up. And one guy pulls a big gold bar out of his pocket and waves it around trying to buy a ride. And then a guy in a Jetson car slows down and mockingly asks him if he hadn't heard they started manufacturing gold 20 years ago, you idiot! And isn't that the way of all the crap we buy? Even if it doesn't become obsolete or broken or worn out, there almost always is a point where the thrill is gone, and its only worth is utilitarian. Cars are perfect examples. I stood there at the Christmas parade, and there must have been some kind of classic Chevy car club participating, a stream of 55s and 57s all gleaming and restored and some customized. And one in particular caught my eye. It was a 57 that looked all original, right down to the driver. This dude must have been in his 80s and was kind of shrunken behind that wheel. The car was immaculate, two-tone, sort of a pistachio green under white. And I did some math in my head. Let's see. If that driver was the original owner, he would have probably been at least, say, 21 to buy that Chevy back in 57, which would crank it back to him being born about 1936, which would make him, yep, at minimum, 81 years old. Holy shit, if that car could talk. How many times had he hung a red satin Christmas bow from the rearview mirror, or run silver garlands from the aerial to the hood ornaments? How did he feel when he first saw that machine gleaming in a showroom, when he drove it home and showed it to his parents, his buddies, or his girlfriend? Did he wind up marrying her? Where was she? The passenger seat was empty. As he carefully steered it down that sun-baked street on a hot Sunday afternoon, what Christmas ghosts from his lengthy past rode shotgun with him? School buddies, pointy chicks in saddle straps and poodle skirts? As a young man, was he a Scrooge or a Fezziwig? Maybe he was a lifelong bachelor. Maybe he'd once had the perfect pointy chick on that seat and blown it because a blob of ketchup oozed out of her In-N-Out double-double burger and stained his Madeira star-flecked upholstery. And he blew a gasket and got pissed off and yelled, and she figured, later for this angry gearhead, he can date his stupid car. Or maybe that wasn't him at all. Maybe the ketchup never fell from the burger, and even if it had, he let it slide, and they lived happily ever after. But still, he looked awfully small behind that big Bakelite wheel, and awfully alone. There's a point in the acquisition of most material things where they lose their allure. When we first get that car, we get upset if a bird shits on it, or if the carpeting is smudged, but over time, something happens. It's no longer a thing of beauty and wonderment. It gets a few door dings. The seats show wear cracks. You realize that no amount of washing or waxing or Armorall or detailing is going to make that car look new. And even if it could, it would not be new to you. And I suppose that's the point at which it just becomes transportation. As I looked at that old man in the gleaming antique car and wondered about his ghosts of Christmas past, I realized we've all got them, don't we? We start collecting them from the very first. Some Christmases might have been fantastic, others disasters. Most fall somewhere in between. I suspect that those who put more in the disaster column tend to rank their Christmases by the volume of gifts under the tree. And how can they wind up anything but disappointed? But then, those who may be less enamored by worldly goods and seek more of a Christmas experience, they might also be disappointed because things are a known quantity, and they do thrill initially until the luster wears off. But people, people can trash your Christmas in a moment, can't they? So we have to choose them even more carefully than we choose our cell phone plans or designer sneakers. There have always been false prophets. But centuries ago, you either had to wait until they came through your hometown to spew their bullshit, or haul ass a long way on a mule or your sandaled feet to listen to their gilded rap. Now, there are hundreds, maybe thousands of them, with hundreds of thousands or millions or tens of millions of Twitter followers. And followers may be way too weak a word. Maybe automatons or lemmings or zombies or slaves might be more accurate. It's really goddamn scary. There was a fascinating story I read today online, and the gist of it is this. Facebook's former vice president for user growth, a guy named Shamath Palihapitiya, recently gave a talk at Stanford. He said he feels, quote, tremendous guilt, unquote, about Facebook. He said, quote, I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops we've created, including the hearts, likes, and thumbs up of various social media channels, are destroying how society works. He added, there's no civil discourse, no cooperation, only misinformation and mistruth. And it's not an American problem. This is not about Russian ads. This is a global problem. Unquote. Finally, he said, when it comes to social media, his children are, quote, not allowed to use that shit. I'd say Chamath and I are roughly on the same page. Social media can be useful, but it is no substitute for real human interaction. Which brings me to the favor I wanted to ask of you. This show has grown nicely over its first year, and more than anything, I want to do a tour. Live shows. The Take No Shit Dojo on the road. Liquor? Of course. Laughs? Plenty. Stories? Yes, I've not yet even cracked the hidden vault. But more than that, I want to get to meet you, to hang with you, because as much as I try to get to know you on social media, it ain't the same. It just isn't. How cool would it be to gather for a few hours in the back salon of the Traveling Dojo somewhere near you? For that to happen, this show has to have a growth spurt, fast, and a multiple of its current audience. Think hyperspace jump. And here's how you can help me make that happen. The hottest news topic that refuses to die is this sexual misconduct thing. And Scandal Clause, my song you heard earlier, is the perfect way for new audiences to get a quick taste of the show. It's not easy getting people to sample even a half-hour podcast, but a 2.5-minute music video, that's a cinch. So maybe you're friends with some Twitter monster with millions of followers. Maybe you could ask them to tweet out the song link. Or maybe you know a drive-time DJ or a big-time blogger or podcaster. Just share the shit out of this song now, today, because one day after Christmas, it's stale. But if we do this, the Take No Shit Tour 2018 will be a reality. So my friends, thank you once again for hanging with me. It's always great to be with you. Stay tuned for the Goss Bomb Show, revealing more than you knew about the genesis of several podcasts with which you are well acquainted. And Tuesday, December 19 will be the Christmas show with a couple of special surprises. This one you can listen to with the whole family. I think you'll dig it. Get at me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com, and I'll see you next Tuesday. And until then, take no shit.